Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. In the second half of today's show, we will hear how geothermal energy in Kenya may help the country's growing power needs. But it also could harm wildlife and the national parks visitors come to see.
But first, we celebrate an anniversary. It has been more than 40 years since the discovery in Ethiopia of the early human skeleton named Lucy.
Lucy is one of the most famous scientific finds of the 20th century. She helped researchers better understand the history of human beings. Marcia James brings us that story.
The famous skeleton has left Africa and is now at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County in California. Researcher Don Johansson recently visited the museum. He discovered Lucy 40 years ago. He says the knowledge found in old bones is still relevant today.
There is a single common origin for humanity. No matter the shape of our eyes, no matter the color of our skin, no matter the shape of our hair, no matter what kind of culture we live in, we all carry those same genes in our body. We are united by our past. We're united by this common beginning.
In 1974, Don Johansson found 40% of Lucy's skeleton, two-fifths of all the bones in her body. At 3.2 million years old, she was the oldest human ancestor found at the time.
Lucy, while she was found so many years ago, still remains terribly important for understanding our earliest beginnings and occupies a very important place on the human family tree as a bridge between more ape-like and more human-like creatures.
Don Johansson says Lucy was just over 1 meter tall, with a small brain and an ape-like face. She had long arms and short legs. She also possessed an important human quality, the ability to walk in an upright standing position. Don Johansson says finding Lucy truly influenced the field of paleoanthropology. He adds that the idea that humans came from Africa is a relatively recent one.
Through much of the 20th century, there was this very Eurocentric view that we all evolved in Europe, that that was the finishing school for humanity. But now there's almost complete consensus among scholars who study human origins that Africa was the place, just as Darwin had predicted way back in the middle 1800s.
Discoveries such as Lucy have led scholars to understand the common origins of all human beings. It also shows the unique or special qualities of modern humans. Humans have a complex brain, language, and culture. Don Johansson says these qualities enable humans to develop and overcome the environmental changes that have happened and will continue to happen over time. I'm Marcia James.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. You are listening to As It Is.
Today, we are talking about Africa. We just heard about the anniversary of finding some of the earliest human bones. Next, we hear about underground energy in Kenya.
Geothermal power comes from heat trapped deep under the Earth's surface. It can be used to produce electricity. Kenya's Rift Valley is rich in geothermal energy. Some Kenyans believe geothermal power is the answer to their nation's energy needs. But most of the drilling areas are in the national park system. Many foreigners go to the parks to see Kenyan wildlife in its natural environment. Mario tells us more.
Geothermal power comes from heat trapped deep under the Earth's surface. It can be used to generate or produce electricity. Kenya's Rift Valley is rich in geothermal energy. Some Kenyans believe geothermal resources are the answer to the nation's energy needs. But most of the drilling sites, areas of exploration, are in the national park system. Many foreigners go to the parks just to see Kenyan wildlife in their natural environment. The Rift Valley extends through the heart of Kenya. The area provides a home to many animals and other wildlife. National parks and protected areas can be found along the length of the valley. For some species, these areas are their last hope for survival. But many Kenyans are coming to depend on the Rift Valley for something else. Electricity. The Olkaria Geothermal Power Center produces 280 megawatts of geothermal electricity. That is enough to meet the power needs of 500,000 homes. The country hopes to generate 5,000 geothermal megawatts by 2030. Using geothermal energy has already reduced the cost of power. The energy is needed for economic growth in a country where only 23% of the population has electricity. But the Olkaria Geothermal Center sits inside Hell's Gate, a national park. That is a concern for environmental activists like Silas Wanjala. He says that Kenyan officials are considering other parks for geothermal projects. It is a coincidence, he says, that these same areas are rich in biodiversity. Geothermal energy is considered green or friendly to the environment. Since it depends on the Earth's natural heat, it is also sustainable or able to last a long time. However, the need for roads and other development means geothermal energy can damage the environment. Simon Thompson has worked with the birds of Hell's Gate for years. He says the park is an excellent habitat for rare species. He blames the power generation in the park for the loss of several large birds of prey. Silas Wanjala says development has also damaged plant life in the park, and he says large mammals like buffalo are not as healthy as they once were. Local guides say the development is hurting tourism and threatening their main source of money. Tour guide Robert Kiambati grew up near the park. He says he does not blame visitors for being disappointed. Some, he said, have called Hell's Gate more of an industrial area than a national park. But Simon Thompson says it is difficult for conservationists to win the debate on the environment when Kenya is so in need of energy. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Ana Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for more English teaching programs from VOA Learning English.
Thank you.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
I'm Susan Clark with the special English program, Words and Their Stories. The Italians have an old saying, Il dolce far niente. The words mean, it is sweet or enjoyable to do nothing. On weekends and during holidays, many of us enjoy doing nothing. But most of the time, we have to work. And to keep our jobs, we must work hard. Our employer will not like it if we do nothing. American workers often call their employers bosses. The word boss comes from the Dutch word boss, meaning master. Sometimes company bosses are called the brass. They are also sometimes called top brass or brass hats. Experts disagree about how these strange expressions started, but they may have come from Britain. Leaders of the 19th century British army wore pieces of metal called oak leaves on their hats. The metal, brass, has a color similar to that of gold. So a leader or commander came to be called a member of the brass, or he might have been called a brass hat, or even the top brass. By the 1940s, the expression had spread beyond military leaders. It also included civilian officials. A newspaper in the American city of Philadelphia used the term in 1949. It called the most important police officials top brass. Other expressions that mean boss or employer have nothing to do with brass or hats. One of these is big cheese. A cheese is a solid food made from milk. The expression probably started in America in the late 19th century. Some experts believe it comes from a word in the Persian or Urdu languages, chiz. The meaning is a thing. So the meaning of big cheese may be a big thing. Other experts say the word cheese in this expression was really an incorrect way of saying chief. The word chief means leader, so the expression may mean big leader. An employer usually does not object to being called boss. But most workers would not call their employers big cheeses, top brass, or brass hats to their faces. These words are not really insulting, but neither do they show great respect. Employers also have expressions to describe their workers. One of them that describes a good worker is that he or she works like a Trojan. This expression probably comes from the ancient writings of the Greek poet Homer. He wrote about the Trojans who lived in the city of Troy. He said Trojans worked very hard to protect their city. Now the expression is often used to describe an employee who works hard for a company. A loyal, hard-working employee is said to work like a Trojan. So be happy if your company's brass hats say you work like a Trojan. They may consider you valuable enough to increase your pay.
Thank you. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today we tell about one of the greatest American presidents, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt was one of the most influential presidents in American history. He was elected president 4 times. He served more than 12 years, longer than any other president. He led the nation through its worst economic crisis and through one of its worst wars. Franklin Roosevelt was first elected president in 1932. As the Democratic candidate, he defeated President Herbert Hoover. Americans were suffering through a terrible economic depression. About 25% of American workers had lost their jobs. They had no money. They had no hope. They waited in long lines to receive free food. Americans did not know if the new president could end the economic crisis.
The new president, Franklin Roosevelt, was 51 years old. His family name was well known to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt, a distant relation, had been president of the United States 30 years before. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was born in 1882 to a rich and important family in Hyde Park, New York. He was the only child of James and Sarah Roosevelt. His mother tried to control Franklin's life as long as she lived. His father made sure his son had the best of everything. But he also taught Franklin that being rich brought with it the responsibility of helping people who were not so lucky.
Franklin married Eleanor Roosevelt in 1905. They were distant relations. In the next 11 years, they had 6 children. In 1910, Mr. Roosevelt was elected to the New York State Legislature. He showed he had great political skills as a state senator. His next job was in the federal government as Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson. Then, in 1920, he was the Democratic Party's unsuccessful candidate for vice president.
In 1921, Franklin Roosevelt suffered a personal tragedy. He was with his family at their summer home. He began feeling very tired. Then he felt severe pain in his back and legs. He could not move. For weeks, he was forced to lie on his back. His doctors discovered that he was a victim of the disabling disease polio. He lost the use of his legs. Franklin Roosevelt was 39 years old. He had always been an active man who loved sports. But now he would never walk again without help.
Many Americans thought the sickness would end Franklin Roosevelt's political dreams. But they were wrong. He showed an inner strength that people respected. He was elected governor of New York State in 1928 and reelected 2 years later. Franklin Roosevelt always appeared strong and friendly in public. He loved to laugh and enjoy life. But his friendly face hid a strong will. Throughout his life, Mr. Roosevelt worked hard to improve life for the common man. He believed government had the power and responsibility to improve the lives of its citizens.
That music, Happy Days Are Here Again, was played during Franklin Roosevelt's presidential campaign in 1932. A large majority of voters decided that maybe he could make that song come true. On Inauguration Day in 1933, the nation waited to hear what the new president would say about the economic future of their country. This is what he said.
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
President Roosevelt promised to end the Depression. He promised to put Americans back to work. He said the federal government would take an active part in creating jobs. During the next 3 months, he led Congress in passing more major new programs than the nation had seen for many years. President Roosevelt called his reform program the New Deal. These are some of the programs created during this time. A National Recovery Administration allowed companies to cooperate to increase production. A Works Progress Administration provided jobs for unemployed workers. A Civilian Conservation Corps put young men to work, protecting the nation's natural resources. The Tennessee Valley Authority built dams, cleared rivers, expanded forests, and provided electricity in the southeastern part of the country.
In 1935, Congress passed two laws that would change the lives of working Americans for years to come. The National Labor Relations Act strengthened the rights of workers and gave more power to labor unions. The Social Security Act created a federal system to provide money for workers after they retired. Franklin Roosevelt became one of the most loved and most hated presidents in the history of the country. The majority of Americans believed he was trying to save the country and protect common people. Opponents charged he was giving the federal government too much power and destroying private businesses.
Franklin Roosevelt tried to establish a close relationship with the American people. He became known by the first letters of his full name, FDR. He talked to the American people by radio to explain what actions were being taken and what he planned for the future. These radio broadcasts helped him gain widespread support for his programs. President Roosevelt ran for re-election in 1936. He defeated the Republican candidate Alfred Landon by one of the largest majorities in the nation's history.
In the late 1930s, another crisis was growing more serious every day. Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party in Germany threatened Central Europe. Japanese forces carried out new aggression in Asia and the Pacific area. FDR warned Americans that a victory by these forces would threaten democracy everywhere in the world. World War II began in 1939 when Germany invaded Poland. Americans hoped Britain, France, and the other Allied powers would defeat Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy. Yet Congress passed a law declaring the United States would remain neutral.
FDR was re-elected in 1940. He was the only president to win a third term in the White House. On December 7, 1941, Japanese planes attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The United States was forced to enter the war. President Roosevelt cooperated closely with British Prime Minister Winston Churchill in the war effort. He discussed war efforts with Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin.
FDR was re-elected president for the fourth time in 1944. Most Americans believed the country should not change its leader in the middle of a war. When he was sworn in, President Roosevelt's speech lasted only 6 minutes. He declared that America had learned that we cannot live alone at peace, that our own well-being is dependent on the well-being of nations far away. President Roosevelt did not live to see the victory of the Allies and the end of World War II. He died less than 3 months later, on April 12, 1945, in Warm Springs, Georgia.
Winston Churchill wrote about the day he heard the news of the death of his close friend. "I felt as if I had been struck with a physical blow. My relations with this shining man had played so large a part in the long, terrible years we had worked together. Now that had come to an end, and I was overpowered by a sense of deep and permanent loss. Millions of people around the world joined Winston Churchill in mourning the death of America's 32nd president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt."
This program was written by Shelley Gullist. It was produced by Lawan Davis. Our studio engineer was Kelvin Fowler. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. Join us again next week on People in America in VOA Special English.